Aloha everyone, I'm Mark Manantan, Director of Cybersecurity and Critical Technologies at the Pacific Forum. Welcome to the Indo-Pacific Current Presents Cyber ASEAN Conversations. This special podcast series, of course, highlights the conclusion of Cyber ASEAN, a two-year cyber capacity building initiative that aims to advance Southeast Asia's proactive role in strengthening its overall cybersecurity and resiliency posture. For the first time here at the Indo-Pacific Current, help me welcome Elina Noor, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Kuichiro Sparke Kumiyama, Senior Researcher, the Keio Research Institute at SFC. Hi, Elina and Sparky. Welcome to the podcast. As we begin our conversation and before we dive into the formal questions about Cyber ASEAN, the project, I think I'm also very curious, and a lot of our listeners would be keen to know, how did you guys start your career in conducting research in cybersecurity?
I think I have shared this story with you many years ago, but in my third year at my university, I was not the computer science major. My major was business, but I was a hardcore gamer. And I prepare online gaming server just for me and my friends. So every night we log into that server, shooting each other, had fun. But one day I got a call from a university network administrators, something goes wrong with your server. I drove to my campus, check my server. And that was my first time in my life see, access from Brazil to my server sitting in Tokyo. And I somehow realized, the internet is really a global network. Even a small computer just for me can be hacked, accessed by hackers on the other side of the globe. So that made me, interested in network itself and cybersecurity as well. And that was the beginning of the whole my career.
Wow, I have zero technical skills and have only ever played games on my phone. And so I did not come to have, thoughts about cybersecurity from any technical standpoint. I came through it from an interest in the governance frameworks around cyberspace. My background is in law, specifically in international law. And although I departed from any legal careers that might have been available to me, I returned to the idea of rules and justice and equity when I began to be more interested in and aware of cyberspace, realizing that people were having these debates around the lack of a dedicated governance framework to, at the time, an emerging domain that many people felt was the Wild West. And so that's how I began to be more interested in sort of the legal frameworks, governance frameworks around cyberspace.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear both of your stories, because it only highlights how the need for cross-cutting and cross sort of or interdisciplinary approach to cybersecurity is, especially for those who are also very eager to enter into this field, but really doesn't have a clear pathway, or if they don't have the necessary skills. And I think your technical, Spakisan, your technical expertise, and Elina's, of course, her expertise on governance and rules really converged when both of you became part of the Global Commission on the Stability of Cyberspace, which was launched in February 2017 and published the final report in 2019. And I would be very curious, since then that you started your career up to this point in this day and age, what has been some of the significant changes that you've observed in cybersecurity?
I had a very big big milestone in my career back in 2013. That was the year US established the Cyber Command. that was the year we first observed the propagation of Stuxnet malware. You know, super sophisticated, well-resourced computer malware could destroy the nuclear facility in Iran, and that was we haven't seen any similar cyber attack with such kind of physical impact before Stuxnet. So that moment, I realized, or I felt like, you know, technology alone cannot solve or cannot secure the cyberspace. And like Elina has been working on, the governance or rule of law norm can also help us to secure the space. And since then, you know, I studied, I went to my graduate school, started my research in international relations and governance field. So it was, and I still, you know, I still having a tough time in that area.
Wait, thanks for bringing up the GCSC. I think I recall like some really fun and interesting conversations with Sparky throughout that time. And that really helped me understand some of the broader challenges around the cyber landscape that we in Southeast Asia are aware of, but not necessarily at the front lines of. And I think this speaks to the evolution of cyberspace and in a way, a disconnect between the region and other regions in the world. And obviously this is driven by different priorities of different governments. But it also highlights, I think, some of the shared concerns around, for example, ransomware, around advanced persistent threats. I think in Southeast Asia, a lot of the threat landscape is still dominated by cybercrime. And that is really where a lot of the governments in the region's focus has been. But increasingly, what we're seeing is a little more sophistication in some of the malware that's being deployed. And obviously, the geopolitical tensions in the background of this changing cyber landscape. So I think the accumulation of threats, the sophistication of threats, as well as the cross-cutting merger between what is purely technical and what is geopolitical is beginning to fashion the landscape of cybersecurity in Southeast Asia.
I think, Elina, you really brought up a very critical point right there, where the emergence of more advanced and more sophisticated malware is something that has been a concern in Southeast Asia. But I think the way that the region has been addressing that varies because of the differences in digital maturity and also the word, as you mentioned, priority. And I think this is where the work on capacity building always comes very, very important in the discussions towards, yes, we know the threat. Yes, there is a propagation of malware. Yes, there is also this growing concerns on cybercrime. But essentially, the region is still grappling in terms of technical, not just technical, but also policy expertise in cybersecurity. And I'll turn to Sparky-san because, of course, your work on JP CERT and essentially Japan itself has been an important provider of capacity building in the region in Southeast Asia. And ASEAN and Japan just celebrated their 50th anniversary last year. And with ASEAN-Japan Cyber Capacity Building Center in Thailand and all the other ASEAN-Japan cyber dialogue consultative processes, what can we expect from Japan in its engagement in Southeast Asia moving forward, given the trends that you guys just outlined?
Mark, that's a very difficult question. I cannot speak on behalf of our government, but from my personal capacity, yes, we highly value relationship with ASEAN, it has been 50 years since we opened up our formal relationship with ASEAN. While facing to several ASEAN member states, I think It is extremely interesting. Ideally, Computer Emergency Response Team, or CSET, was CERT. Ideally, CSET evolved from its birth phase, genesis phase, through the growing phase, and toward moving toward maturity. And that's the ideal life cycle of computer security organization. When we look at the what happened in ASEAN, I think we observe a case where CSETs that were functioning and well-resourced suddenly cease their activities, sometimes due to the change in political leadership or government restructuring or several other, you know, non-tech factors. And I think the Japan's assistance or Japan's relationship is with ASEAN is not fussy, is not sharp edge project. However, I think the beauty of Japan's involvement is we still we've been with them and we will continue working with ASEAN.
Bringing back to the present, and you know, Sparky mentioned that there is that greater engagement and looking forward to working more with ASEAN. But in ASEAN, we see, and this is also from the report that we've written on raising standards, the integration of artificial intelligence and the hype behind it, and also just really everything's tech in Southeast Asia, but the underlying cybersecurity infrastructure capability is still very lacking. So you mentioned this word disconnect previously, you know, in our last question. So do you also see that disconnect with there's that hype, there's that excitement, but also at the same time, investments towards cybersecurity, the importance, the political importance that leaders dedicate to cybersecurity somehow lagging behind?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, but I think it depends on what metrics to measure you're using, right? And so obviously you mentioned there are different levels of digital and technological maturity among all the ASEAN member states, and that certainly plays a role in A, the level of awareness, but B, also the ability, capacity to respond to some of these threats. And part of that also results in governments not having the resources, whether human or financial, to attend to these matters, even at the policy and legal levels. We've had some help from dialogue partners. Obviously, Japan has been front and center on technical capacity building. Singapore, within the ASEAN family, has been leading the charge on policy and legal capacity building. But let's be real, right? All the Southeast Asian countries have differing forms of law. You know, the Indonesians have civil law in place. In Malaysia and Singapore, we have common law. So in order to have some sort of regional harmonization of laws, even policies that are going to be translated into domestic laws, we need to have some understanding, some basic and common understanding of the standards, these legal standards that will be tabled at the regional level.
And I think talking about, you know, standards and the importance of harmonization across the region, when you have 10 different countries with, you know, different priorities and also different vision of how they govern internet and cyberspace, I think it's really a very arduous task. Bring it back to our conversation regarding advanced persistent threat actors. And Sparky mentioned Stuxnet 2013, a decade ago. And now, you know, attribution is something that a lot of nation states have been just using at their disposal, which is very different a decade ago. In Southeast Asia, and not to get ahead of myself about in the report, in Southeast Asia, attribution remains to be a taboo. But given the increasing presence of advanced persistent threat actors with the geopolitical tensions in the region, Has there been a shift in the attitude in the region, Irina, regarding attribution?
No, I don't think so. I believe that the capacity to attribute technically is there, and that is quite, I think, an achievement on its own. But the political will to attribute any particular campaign or operation to any one actor comes with consequences, particularly against, you know, tense geopolitical power plays that we're seeing right now. And so I don't foresee most Southeast Asian countries playing the attribution game the way, for example, Western countries have. Australia has been very bold in attributing. I don't see many Southeast Asian countries willing to take that step for various reasons.
Sparky, what are your thoughts about attribution? And I think in the earlier discussions that we had at the Cyber ASEAN project, you mentioned this word called depolitization. And I think this place specifically within the AP CERT family, where regardless if there are political tensions and diplomatic frictions among the members, a lot of the CERTs and C-CERTs or a member of the AP CERT tend to have their eyes on the prize, meaning they don't let the political and the diplomatic frictions or ruptures get in the way of working together for a bigger cause. So do you think that's going to be a continuing characteristic of the AP CERT community?
I think this is a twofold question. First, let me respond to attribution by ASEAN. I completely agree with Elena's assessment. While, for example, NATO or CIS or Shanghai Cooperation Organization, they are pretty active in analyzing, attributing cyber attack to their member states, and do not hesitate to publicly attribute cyber attack to any state. NATO is NATO and ASEAN is ASEAN. I think that the very common shared principle of ASEAN is well, the word ASEAN way describe it. It's not the ASEAN's role to point finger to any member states or any countries. It is more peaceful organization. It's not a security organization. So I will not surprise, for example, any ASEAN member states to attribute cyber attack to, for example, from Japan or Korea, but it will not happen. ASEAN to made a public attribution. And on your second question for AP CERT, it has been more than 20 years since Asia Pacific regional wide CERT community has established. We now have 30 members from 23 economies, not country, 23 economies, including, for example, economy like Taiwan, Hong Kong. I like to mentioned that the committee itself has been changing a little bit. I think compared to a decade ago, for example, Hong Kong, Macau, they are more independent. Now they are officially, well, they are more direct control from Beijing. And that, you know, that prevent us to do several cooperation among AP CERT members. And, you know, it is getting more difficult to even collaborate among AP CERT members. But I think the, you know, major or key solution for this problem is, you know, to have more chance of seeing each other. During the pandemic, we couldn't host any face-to-face meeting, but those meeting will get back from this year. So I think more activities will happen among episode framework.
Thanks for bringing that up, Sparky, because it leads me to the next question about trust building. You've mentioned the importance of those formal and informal engagements. And in Southeast Asia, I think there's also a very distinct manner in which we build trust amongst institutions, amongst our peers. And how do you think that, Elena, plays in creating that trust among and within or beyond ASEAN countries and their dialogue partners?
Yeah, I think what Sparky mentioned about getting together in person is really important, even if it's just to talk with no particular outcome, right? And we're often in ASEAN criticized for being a talk shop. But I think the real trust building happens because we talk so much to each other. And it doesn't have to always come to a deliverable, a tangible deliverable. Sometimes a tangible deliverable happens after several rounds of meeting because you can't get at an outcome when you don't have trust and confidence amongst each other. So I think the networking part, often undervalued by countries outside of ASEAN, is really valuable amongst Southeast Asians. And it's unfortunate that COVID got in the way, but as Sparky said, hopefully we'll have no more get-togethers in person.
Adding to a face-to-face conversation in the, for example, ASEAN regional forum context, there has been a proposal made by Australia and Malaysia to develop a regional directory of point of contact. So when something goes wrong, this is the list of email address and phone number which you can call or you can email. And I believe discussion on this have been taking place at ARF since around 2014. And the consensus decision was back in 2019. So it took 5 years for ASEAN to establish, to prepare the point of contact list for cyber issues. The good news is, it went beyond ASEAN. Last year at the UN General Assembly, there was a agreement to develop a global directory of UN member states' point of contact, also for cyber issues. Sitting between two superpowers in the Pacific, it makes ASEAN subject to pressure, but it also means that discussion in ASEAN sometimes prefigure or shape the discussion in more global forum. And what happened to ASEAN today will be a global phenomenon or global trend in after a few years. So the importance of ASEAN is increasing these days.
I mean, I think Sparky is being generous, but I'm glad that there is this happy coincidence of developments. It took so long. I remember those conversations about points of contact. They're still discussing that at the OEWG on ICTs in the context of international security. I'm saying this half jokingly, of course, but I think there's some truth to it. Relationship building that has been happening, I wonder how much a point of contact directory will be used if people are just, sending messages on platforms like WhatsApp or Line or others. That's a different version of a points of contact directory, I guess.
Which brings me, of course, to our project, Cyber ASEAN framework. And over the last 2 years, we've managed, at least Elena, to resuscitate some of those people-to-people engagements through the consultations that we've conducted across Manila, Hanoi, and Jakarta, and Kuala Lumpur. And like I've mentioned, we've completed the framework and we're releasing the report. So what are some of the key takeaways that both of you have regarding the report and also during the entire process of being involved as, of course, our very much highly esteemed senior advisors to Cyber ASEAN?
For me, I was really encouraged to see that there is a lot of thought that's happening within the region about how to distinguish an approach that works for the region in an inclusive manner, despite all our differences. And I was also really encouraged by the fact that there is willingness to work together as ASEAN, the grouping, instead of taking very separate national approaches. So I think those two in particular stood out for me. And maybe one, I'll just throw in one more, is how difficult it is to measure attacks in cyberspace. And I think maybe it's Sparky, that's more Sparky's area. You can have any number attributed to these attacks or campaigns, but separating them out into different motivations, it's something that is a lot harder to do, I think, as you've also found out, Mark.
I guess you had a four different consultation, and I was very happy seeing that at least for these four countries, they all welcome the concept of ASEAN CERT or ASEAN Regional CERT. And, you know, I didn't know it was well accepted and welcomed by ASEAN member states. So that was a very good indication. But talking about the ASEAN CERT, Elina mentioned sometimes it takes more time in ASEAN. So the concept of ASEAN CERT was proposed in 2011, you know, first proposed in the ASEAN ICT Master Plan, another document. And since then, there have been various discussions, including the exploration of ASEAN, ANSAC, ASEAN Network Security Action Council, which is also mentioned in this report, and leading to the current agreement at the, you know, minister level just February this year. 13 years have been spent on the realization of ASEAN Regional CERT. I take it as a sign of the growing interest in cybersecurity within ASEAN member states. I take it as a general willingness to work together between ASEAN member states. And however, reading this report, I think it shows the cybersecurity capabilities have been improved dramatically or significantly in Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia, where consultations were conducted. But ASEAN and ASEAN Secretariat in Indonesia, they are sitting in very different situation. ASEAN has its own time frame, which does not always match the pace of many of its member states. So, well, we should be careful when talking about the ASEAN cybersecurity. Are you talking about the security of ASEAN as a whole, or ASEAN Secretariat, or individual ASEAN member states?
The ASEAN Secretariat itself has been a target of number of attacks, but they are, as Sparky said, in a different situation because they're reliant on the support of member states. And as it is, you know, they're overwhelmed with over 1,000 meetings a year, and to get the support, whether moral or financial, is going to add more strain to their already very tight resources.
Thank you so much, Elina and Sparky. It's great working with you on this project, and thank you for sharing your expertise and views. I'm very, very sure that a lot of our viewers and listeners learned so much from this first episode of the Indo-Pacific Current Presents Cyber ASEAN Conversations. In the coming weeks, stay tuned for the succeeding episodes spotlighting the contributions of select country experts who are featured in the Cyber ASEAN report. You can, of course, access and download the Cyber ASEAN report at cyberasean.pacforum.org. If you learn from this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues, and you may also check the Indo-Pacific Current podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify for the succeeding episodes. Stay updated and follow us on our social media accounts. Just search Pacific Forum on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So that's all for now. This is your host, Mark Manandan, for this special series of the Indo-Pacific Current Presents Cyber ASEAN Conversations.